Welcome, Knicks fans, to episode 57 of the Worldwide Knicks Podcast. Omar here alongside with Alex and Rafa after a very exciting Knicks week of basketball. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks. Apart from a bit of a dodgy cold, so you can probably hear in my voice. But yeah, a really crazy, interesting week. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Better than expected, considering the week we could have had and right. The one we ended up having. So it could be worse.
Yeah, Alex got the flu game going on right now. You know, activate Jordan mode. You know, hopefully he doesn't activate Scottie Pippen mode. You know, so yeah, that's the way to go there. You know, two very painful Bulls references there, but. Alex, you mentioned a little bit better than anticipated, 3-1 this past week, which I think Rafa had that, right? If I'm not mistaken, right? Did you predict 3-1 last week? I think you did.
I think I did. Did I get the games right? Maybe I did.
I think you might have. I don't know. But we ended up splitting in Philly. So one win, one loss against the 76ers, win against Orlando and a win against Utah. So 3-1, solid week, closing in on the All-Star break, which is this coming weekend, which should be fun. But, you know, the trade deadline was the other day. And, you know, we had Brutus Gorham on from Knicks Spaces last week. And he talked a lot about trades, a lot about players. Not a lot happened for the Knicks. And they ended up getting a player that none of us talked about at the time, which is former Villanova standout Josh Hart from the Blazers, Jalen Brunson's old teammate, and the Knicks sent out Cam Reddish, a lottery protected first-round pick, and for other purposes also sent out Svi Mihailuk and Ryan Arcidiacono. So, Alex, no more you and I advocating for 5 to 6 minutes of Svi every now and then. So that dream is dead.
Thank God.
But I guess the big story here is – the Knicks finally got rid of Cam Reddish, and, you know, he's been on the bench since December and hasn't gotten any meaningful minutes with the team at all, even when there was injuries and foul trouble and things of that nature. So I remember thinking back to when we made the Cam Reddish trade last year, and, you know, Rafa and I were foolishly over exuberant talking about a fleecing of the Hawks, and Alex had the accurate reaction, which was to be a little bit more measured. Right. So I guess, Alex, do you, first of all, take your victory lap about Cam Reddish? And second of all, is this kind of one of the on the lower end of deals that this front office has made since Leon and company took over?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I was like massively against Cam or anything. I just saw what happened with the Hawks and just thought, you know, there's a few red flags there. And it just turned out that, you know, even when he was traded, I'm not his biggest fan, but I've said many times over the course of the last year that, you know, there was definitely a role there for him. I've been banging on about this for so long that the Knicks really, really struggle at the three spot. And And we've talked about how RJ is not potentially, you know, really a three, but even then there's no backup to him, you know, which is forces, I think, a lot of these heavy minutes that he gets given. I mean, you could argue that Tibbs gives heavy minutes to lots of players, but I think especially at the three spot, you know, I don't think he trusts either of Obi or Randall to step down. And you know, players to step up. I mean, he's had McBride step up there despite his size and things like that. And I think it was a real problem, which meant that, you know, if Cam just got his head down and, you know, worked hard, I think there was a role there for him. And I think the problem was that, you know, he always seems to have had, and this might be unfair, I don't know, we obviously don't know the ins and outs of it, but it seems to us that you know, he had a bit of ideas above his station sort of thing. And, you know, he wasn't prepared just to be that kind of role player. And he always seemed to want to to be the main man, which he was in college and high school, and you know, it just seems to be that I often watch Cam for the Knicks, and you know, you have plenty of good games and plenty of times where you thought, yeah, this guy's got a real role in the team, that we can use him as a backup, but he seemed to sometimes just play his own game. Like he looked like he was just out there just playing for himself. You know, there never seemed to be that kind of just sacrificing for the team, and he just blended in with the rest of the team, whether he just didn't fit Tibbs' system. You know, it certainly looked anyway that there was some kind of personal issue between the two anyway, which does happen, and this is not me defending Tibbs. It's just
a game of egos, man.
These things happen in sports, you know, where you have just like personality clashes where it just doesn't work, and you've got to pick one way or the other. And you know, if the front office have got a decision to make and say, well, on the one hand, we've got this player that doesn't get on with the coach, but you know, it's not like he's a star player. He's not the main man on the team, where we can just kind of let a few things slide. You know, this guy's standing there stamping his feet, saying he wants to do this, he wants to do that. And, you know, we have to side with the coach in the grand scheme of things. So I think that's all it was. And, you know, I wish him well, and I hope he does well in Portland. As I said to you guys in the week, I can't stand all this kind of, oh, you know, look at what he's doing now. You know, look, you know, we made this huge mistake. You know, it's just like, well, maybe he's just thriving in another situation. You know, good on him, you know, and it's nothing personal. So, yeah, I hope he does well. And
can we mention real quick that Portland seems to be this, like, rehabilitation center for the NBA now? Like, yeah. Melo went there to revive his career. Like a bunch of, like, players. They just happen to, like, oh, Portland's like, I guess we'll give this guy a shot. And, you know, he kind of rejuvenates their stock for whatever reason. And then, you know, they're on to the next thing. But, Rafa, what were your thoughts on the Cam experiment?
Oh, I think it failed tremendously.
Yeah.
And I will always believe that Cam Reddish was not a pickup that Tibbs ultimately gave the yes, let's get him. It was a pick like, oh, we got him, Tibbs. What are you going to do about him? Well, nothing, because he was not a Tibbs guy. You know, you look at Josh Hart and we compare the Tibbs guyness. It's, well, Josh Hart is, Cam Reddish isn't.
Yeah,
and you can just say it's like, how was it? How much time, did Cam Reddish had to wait to learn the playbook before he actually got a minute in the team?
Yeah.
So that, obviously, looking at the players, Josh Hart seems like a better fit with the Knicks of what we need. So obviously he played, and he played his role, and ultimately, well, he played well in his one game that completely won over MSG and Knicks Twitter in general. But yeah, he was never the guy. I think he was doomed to fail here, basically, because he was never, especially when Grimes came up. I'm not blaming Grimes. I'm not getting that thing, Grimes versus Cam Reddish thing. But Grimes coming up, he was doing what Tibbs wanted him to do. Just took less space from took more space from Cam. So he was he was here, and man, ultimately we gave up 2 first round picks and Kevin Knox to get Josh Hart, which is not amazing. 2 picks, one heavily protected, and this one is protected as well. But ultimately, what we gave up with Ryan and Svi as well. So yeah, but I mean, he never really. I don't think he really ever had a shot here. He was last year. He didn't play, and then when he played, he got injured. He was given those last late season minutes that Obi got. It was the only time Obi got as well. And this year he played when Grimes was injured, and then Fournier was no good, and then they went out of rotation, and that was it. It was Cam Reddish. He had a big shot against Memphis, I think, to go to overtime. That was well, it's what he did here, basically. He was never a Tibbs guy. I mean, it's not a knock on Tibbs. Tibbs obviously has a style he likes to play and players he likes to bring in. Josh Hart, he wanted Josh Hart in Minnesota, couldn't get him, and he got him with the Knicks. So it's good luck for him.
Right.
Good luck for him in the Blazers playing meaningful minutes with the Portland Trail Blazers.
Nice. I mean, the thing about Cam, guys, is like, it's always going to be hard. And again, Alex, you pointed this out when the trade happened. You're getting rid of a guy who's not in the rotation and you're acquiring a guy. It's going to be hard for somebody with such an ironclad rotation like Thibodeau has to be able to crack that rotation. He wasn't able to. And I think Cam Reddish's ultimate legacy is how much Knicks fans cling on to mediocre players, right?
Yeah.
Like, guys are out of the rotation. You know, like, you got guys like, I was one of these guys. I was a big Damian Dotson fan. Like, I liked him a lot when he was on the team, right? I mean, you still got the Frank Ntilikina people. You know, there's always some guy on the Knicks that people, like, they're usually relatively athletic. And, you know, they make a lot of highlights, I you like know. And people like to latch on to them, right? So I think that's Cam's ultimate legacy. You know, they basically took a swing at it. You know, bring a guy who played in college with RJ. You know, that doesn't mean nothing. You know, so that's something. And ultimately just didn't work out. If there was a different coach here, maybe it's different. If Quentin Grimes doesn't ascend the way he ascended, maybe it's different. And maybe you have a lineup with Cam starting alongside RJ on the wing. But that's not what happened. You know, Quentin Grimes has big favor within this front office and coaching staff. We know that the organization loves him and we all like him too. I'm not trying to diss Quentin Grimes here, you know, the way things unfolded, it just didn't work out for Cam, and Cam is now in Portland to try and resuscitate his career. You know, hopefully he does well. Maybe he gets re-signed by the Blazers. Maybe somebody else signs him. You know, we'll see what happens. Obviously he's going to be a unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. So, you know, it's all a waiting game, right? To see what kind of happens. But Rafi kind of led into it a little bit. The Knicks acquired Josh Hart from the Blazers in this deal. He got his first action against Utah, was magnificent. Bunch of steals, bunch of rebounds, scored some points, brought the defensive intensity. So I guess, what do you make of this acquisition and how is this going to set them up for the rest of the year?
Well, I mean, it's exactly as Rafa said. I think, you know, he just seems like he's obviously, I mean, Tibbs has obviously talked so much about him over the last period that, you know, he's such a Tibbs kind of style player. And I think that's a big deal. And I was actually going to ask you about, you know, the difference, because when the Cam deal went through, it seemed to have been, you know, kind of without kind of Tibbs sign off. And I just think that's a possibly an interesting dynamic, the fact that now they're going for players that officially he's not just signing off, but he's actually actively demanding and wanting. You know, so
thank for that, Alex. It's all because of Evan Fournier, because they signed Fournier in the summer. Well, we need more offensive range of versatility to help Julius and help RJ. They signed Fournier, not a Tibbs guy. We can all agree on that. Not a Tibbs style player, right? And because he doesn't play defense. And then you saw what happened last year. Yeah, he set a record, but, you know, they were on the outside looking in on the play-in, and they want to be in the playoffs, you know? Yep. So now they're looking at it like, hey, we got to get players that are going to work for this coach if we want to win in the playoffs, because we want to sell playoff seats for Dolan, right? That's kind of like, that's how Dolan measures success. You know, being able to sell playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kemba are even a better example than Fournier, because I remember, Fournier was at least signed off by Steve Clifford, who's close to Tibbs.
Right.
So it clearly seemed that Tibbs had got the okay about Fournier. So, but Kemba just seemed to be one straight out of kind of, well, you know, we want you to change your offense and change your style of play. So here's
felt a like a World Wide West come. Deal, didn't it? Like them getting Kemba. Exactly. He's like, oh, it's a big name, New York kid, let's get him type thing.
Yep. So I know we should have seen that coming. There's so many red flags just against exactly what's happening with what happened with Cam. So, but no, but I mean, back on topic with Hart, it's hard not to kind of get totally sucked in by the, you know, just the enthusiasm, the kind of total team first guy, and just exactly the sort of player that, you know, New York fans will just adore. So Clyde said in the commentary the other night, you know, the ball just seems to get attracted to him. He's like kind of magnetic, you know. You know, he's a small guy for getting that many rebounds. I think he's in the 99th percentile or something for rebounds or for his size in the league. And he just seems to, the ball just seems to attract him. And I think with him and Quickly, you've just got some fantastic rebounding stats for the size. So yeah, I think he to me looks like a player that you could really rely on, kind of crunch time minutes, especially in the playoffs. So you know, if we get their playoffs, then you know he could be a massive part of it.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. It's like Josh Hart. I always liked Josh Hart. He's like kind of guy. He's not a very flashy player, but I always liked his style of play. So I'm when we picked him up, he kind of is a player we discussed last week with Brutus, a guy who can play defense, a guy who can battle out there.
Yeah.
He's I like him more than Grayson Allen, for example. But that style of play that does the – well, he does the dirty work.
Rafa, is he a Grayson Allen-style player?
No. I mean,
different. I was going to go there too.
No, it's a different – it's the guy who does the dirty work.
Yeah.
Well, Grayson Allen does a different type of dirty work. But
yeah, that's a fact.
There you go. But it's a type of play. You can play defense. You can play multiple positions. According to Tips, you can play the four. I'm hoping if he does that, that the Obi dies.
Dude, if he plays the four, you know how many times Clyde would make height references? He'll be going up against some 6'8" guy, and they'd be like, "No, Hart's only 6'8", folks, or 6'5", folks. This guy's 6'8". You know, it's
oh my god,
prepare yourself for that.
I'm waiting for Hartenstein and Josh Hart just to make plays with only the two of them, just a two-man game, so Clyde can brain freeze. I'm loving it. But yeah, man, I like the pickup of Josh Hart. I agree with what you said also, Omar, about the getting a Tibbs guy finally, because they tried something different. I don't think that even Fournier or Kemba was Tibbs was not okay. This is the guy. Okay, let's get this guy. I think Fournier might have been a plan B. Some might say, but they tried something different and it didn't work. And Josh Hart is a pickup that, even if they needed to overpay a bit, because those pickups are not Tibbs's guys, I was like, okay, maybe we need to give this coach we are with something he wants and he needs, even if we have to overpay a bit, instead of giving 4 second-round picks, it was or five, then the real number from this trade deadline to get Josh Hart. It's like we need him because he's our coach, like him or not. If he's going to leave or not. Well, if you have the coach and he's your coach, you need to give him players that he wants. It's if you're not doing that, even if you don't like, if you have him and you're sticking with him, you need to give him players. Not, I'm not giving the players you want because you'll be gone at the end of the season. It's stupid. So I get the pickup. I like the pickup, Josh Hart. The game we saw, I think both lineups flourished with him. The second unit looked so much different. And Tibbs maintained his rotation, but there was clearly a man who was desperately, desperately trying to stay in that role. It was Deuce McBride. And the minute Josh Hart was in, we all knew that Deuce McBride was out of the rotation. His defense wasn't amazing. He was playing defense, but he was getting beat a lot. And his offense, I said it multiple times, he's a black hole on offense. He sucks everything. He had one good offensive game. That's it. So Josh Hart coming in, even if he doesn't score too many points, he plays that defense, grabs the rebounds. I mean, that's fourth quarter when, while Julius Randle was shooting bricks, he was getting every rebound. I mean, he grabbed every rebound. I was like, there were three straight plays where Julius Randle shot a brick and the ball went to Josh Hart with the rebound.
You could see him. You could see him move it even before, even you know, while the ball was in the air. You know, not even after it hit the rim.
Yeah.
You could see how sharp he was. Yeah. You could see, you know, he knew exactly where the ball was going. He's just got a kind of sense of where the ball's going.
Just, I will just finish with this. I want to see. I'm dying to see the offensive rebounds we get with Josh Hart and Mitchell Robinson. Pull it up, boys. The guys will grab the offensive rebound. It's done. It's over.
Well, as you know, Rafa, that is our best offense, is when we miss a three and get a long rebound and they're able to set it up for an easy basket. So it's kind of like the rim has the most assists for the Knicks all year. So that's very important to remember. I think the thing, too, that is worth mentioning here a little bit is this is another move as well to kind of show how committed they are to Jalen Brunson, right? You know, like, oh, here's your college teammate, one of your best friends. You know, we're going to bring him on board here. And he immediately was part of the closing lineup against Utah. And I would imagine we'll see that tonight against Brooklyn and moving forward throughout the rest of the year. This feels like a move to me, like when they acquired Derrick Rose a couple years ago. Like they're trying to say, hey, we got to fortify this bench. We got to make sure we're good for the playoffs and for the playoff run. And they have very real ambitions of potentially, you know, getting to the playoffs and potentially winning a series. I think Josh Hart does that for you. He, like you guys mentioned already, gives you the defense, gives you the rebounding, of course. Hit a couple threes. I know there was a little bit of concern about that he had kind of lost faith in his shot in Portland towards the end there. But, you know, he looked pretty confident shooting the corner threes a couple of times, went 2 for 3 from there against Utah. So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. And I think it really fortifies this bench unit, right? Like up until now, it's been Quickly and everybody else, right? Like Quickly has been by and large the most productive bench player for the Knicks this year. And like OB has really been super up and down, and now his minutes are, you know, whatever. And obviously Hartenstein is not really a threat offensively. And you talked about McBride, Rafa, you know, that shot just never falls for him. So you get a guy in Hart who can initiate a little bit, who could get to the basket, who could score, is decent size, could shoot the three a little bit. And, you know, you give somebody, you know, an interesting lineup there with him and Quickly and Obi and Hartenstein there as part of that bench unit. I don't know. I think it's interesting, right? But I do want to mention that was the only deal that the Knicks made at the deadline this year. It seems to be a trend for Leon Rose, right? He doesn't really like to make too many deadline deals, especially not at the deadline deals. I don't think he's really made one since he's been on board here. So Evan Fournier is still on the roster. Derrick Rose still on the roster. Those guys were not moved as we thought they might be. So, Alex, what do you think about that? Is that something that they should have pursued, trying to get off of those guys, or is it worth keeping them around just in case?
I think, again, thinking ahead to the playoffs, somebody like Fournier could end up being a big help, especially if there's going to be injuries coming in. You know, I mean, not as in like a, you know, a starter or anything, but I'm just saying that if there are injuries coming in, there's somebody that, you know, kind of as part of the rotation knows the, you know, the system and everything. So, I think possibly they were a wee bit cautious about letting him go. As for the others, you know, you're likely going to have to attach assets to get off them. So maybe they just said, you know, there wasn't a deal out there. I mean, for everybody that I see that says, oh, you know, you need to just get these guys out the door. Do you know, like it's more complicated than that. You know, these guys are under contract, and you know, you have to have a willing buyer. So, you know,
only if you attach 5 second-round picks, Alex. That's what you have to do. If you attach five second-round picks, you get rid of anybody.
Why didn't we stockpile all these second-round picks if we're not going to just attach them to get rid of the players that we that we want to? So, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we're not privy to all the stuff that goes on, you know, the phone calls that are made. But I'm sure that phone calls were made to try and get off. I mean, there was a late rumor about Rose to Chicago, but thankfully that didn't come to anything because it would mean that LaVine would come to New York. So
I totally forgot about the late LaVine stuff. God. I mean, not to derail the topic, I mean, what was your guys' reaction about those rumors? I was personally mortified, and I almost dropped my phone. So
yeah, we were almost doing it like a minute by minute countdown, like to the deadline. So just like, please don't do anything, please.
Yeah.
You know, when you say about, oh, did Rose do enough at the deadline? We were at one point just like, I don't want you to do anything anymore. Please just go to sleep and let's do nothing. You know, if that was the main rumor that was out there. So yeah.
We traded for Zach LaVine, I would turn toxic.
Yep.
Toxic, but I would send a requirement to the John Papa Left.
Direct message to Papa Left.
Dude, no. Trading for Zach LaVine and trading or RJ or Grimes for that cancer of a contract attached to Zach LaVine, that would be the most stupid thing in the most, well, it would be the most Knicks thing ever. we were making fun of Chicago for, oh, look at this, DeRozan and LaVine and Lonzo, they're not going to win a title with these guys. Telling me that Zach LaVine, Jalen Brunson, and Julius Randle is a championship team? Please. Please, it's not. Don't trade for Zach LaVine. Even don't. Just don't. I mean, please. I was mortified. I was like, oh my God, they're going to do it. Oh my God, they're going to fucking shit the bed.
Especially attaching picks for him as well. It's like, well, Chicago should be giving us the picks, you know, to get off that.
Yeah, to get off of that big of a contract, right? Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It was three picks, Grimes, Fournier, was in there, or right? Whatever it is,
yeah,
for LaVine. Like, oh, for LaVine. Yeah, Obi, for LaVine, and Goran Dragic. Like,
oh, yeah, it's Dragic.
The corpse of Goran Dragic still hanging around the NBA.
Yeah, and the corpse of Zach LaVine, $50 million. Please, no. Zach LaVine is the worst trade the Knicks could have done. And it would be stupid not to trade Quentin Grimes for Utah for Donovan Mitchell, and then 6 months later trade for Zach LaVine.
Right.
Trade him for Zach LaVine. It would be like, what are we doing? Even RJ Barrett, number one, with target on the back for Knicks fans. That would be the dumbest thing. If I was a Chicago fan and I would get three first round picks, Obi Toppin, RJ Barrett, and Derrick Rose, or whatever else, for Zach LaVine, I would cheer in the street.
Yeah, I'd be doing somersaults down Michigan Avenue, man. You'd be going crazy. When the LaVine things were, the rumors were that, I was like, please no. Because it's a great point that you make, Rafa. Like, if we weren't going to give up Quentin Grimes or Donovan Mitchell, damn as hell sure we're not going to give him up for Zach fucking LaVine. Like, what are we doing here, right? Like Mitchell's contract's a little bit better than LaVine's, and he doesn't have the history.
A better player.
He's just a better player, you know, overall. And but back to the Fournier and Rose thing. I do agree with what you're saying about Fournier, Alex. I was really anticipating Rose to be gone, though, because I do feel like he can contribute this year as a backup point guard on a team that is looking to make a deep playoff run. You know, maybe a Denver, you know, is looking for somebody as to kind of anchor that bench unit type thing. But
the Bucks were linked as well.
Yeah. And, you know, it didn't happen. And, you know, Rafa, you mentioned before we started recording about maybe he's angling to kind of become a coach eventually type thing. And maybe that's why he's not pursuing the buyout. I'm not mad at the team staying quiet at the deadline, though. Ultimately, you know, I feel like a lot of teams who make big deals at the deadline, which we're about to talk about one in a second here, you know, those are teams that are poorly run organizations. You know, they're panicking at the 19th, at the last hour, right? And they're trying to, you know, make a big splash and salvage whatever's left of their season or whatever the case may be. And, you know, the Knicks right now, they feel like they're not that team. They feel like they're on a pretty good trajectory to make the playoffs, and they like that. They have an all-star player and a second player who should have been an all-star, and an ascending young player in RJ Barrett, and another ascending young player in Quentin Grimes. I mean, they like what they have. They like the core, right?
And Emmanuel Quickly. Respect to Emmanuel Quickly. He's been playing great.
Hey, let's get Stacey Patton on the show so we could talk about his future all-star trajectory that he likes to talk about so much. But But yeah, so ultimately, I think that's a good thing. But let's talk a little bit, guys, about the complete opposite situation across the river in Brooklyn.
Can I talk about as well about the deadline no moves?
Oh yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry,
dude. John,
I thought you had nothing to say on the matter. You just want to talk about LaVine, you know?
No, man, you got me riled up with LaVine. I think Fournier. I actually think that they're saving Fournier for that cap bigger trade, because trading Fournier right now would be a dump, like adding him to Obi, and you would need to add Obi or picks to get rid of Fournier. And if it's a bigger trade for a star, supposed star, I think Fournier's money is a big. If we traded Fournier right now, we needed to get money back. Because the teams, well, depending on what team we traded him for, to, so it's we need money back, and you know how many years that guy would have with the money. So I think they kind of looked at trading Fournier, but not too much, because saving that contract. I think off season, I think he's gone. You know, he even made a comment about on Twitter. I don't know if you guys saw that, Evan Fournier, about it. Well, I can unpack my bags now. He's being super professional about it. I mean, at least, through to us, the Knicks fans seeing. And we didn't even mention the all the Obi Toppin rumors. There was a lot of Obi rumors. They wanted the first round pick for him, unprotected. I can understand they're running the Knicks wanting a first round pick for him, unprotected one for Obi Toppin. I mean, can you ask for an unprotected first-round pick for a guy that was playing 10 minutes? I mean, it's kind of weird about it. So I get trying to get the most assets possible, but if you're paying 10 minutes a guy, I mean, it's tough. It's not like the Warriors getting Payton, who didn't play a single minute this year. So, yeah.
I mean, do you think that they should just throw the white flag in on Obi as a Knick and just kind of maybe sell him off in the summer, now that, again, that Julius has had another all-star campaign and, you know, he looks like he's here for the long haul. So is that something you think they should look into?
Absolutely. He can crack the rotation with Julius Randle playing like this. And Obi is not on the same level. I don't know if he can be on the same level. Let him just do what you did with Cam Reddish. Just let him go. I mean, people will move on. So it's done. It was a tough break for Obi. Randle was supposed to be gone. He 2 out of 3 years, he's an all-star. So there's nothing you can do.
It's hard to make the argument now, I think, for Obi, when you're talking about replacing a now 2-time all-star. You know, like that's like it's easy to say, oh, he got in the COVID year, you know, no empty gyms, whatever, you know, it was just a fluke. But now it's a second all-star appearance in 3 years, you know, and it's hard to kind of justify that. And, you know, Obi, I think, you know, he's not being used right. I think we've all talked about that before. He's, you know, he's being parked in the corner, shooting corner threes. It's not his game, you know, and he just hasn't really been able to fully develop because of that, I think. And I don't think that's really his fault. I mean, I think a lot of times, I think with the Knicks as currently constructed, we look at the starters, and a lot of times we want the bench player to come in and do what the starter was doing, you know, as in the same play type. Hartenstein's like a perfect example, right? Like we want him to play like Mitch, even though he's not like Mitch, right? You know, and that's just the system, you know, it is what it is, you know, so I don't know. I just feel like Obi should get another chance somewhere. I don't know where that is. You know, it's tough to say because he gets such a little run. Like, who's really interested, you know? And like, do you go to a young team that's developing talent, so where he would get a bunch of playing time, like San Antonio or Detroit or something like that? Or do you go to like as like a secondary starter in for a contending team? It's tough to say, you know, so it's just like I do think he should be moved just for the sake of his career. He came in older than the rest of typical rookies do in the NBA, and so he was already behind the eight ball now. So now it's 3 years kind of only playing 10, 12, 14 minutes behind Julius Randle. And, you know, Julius doesn't get hurt, man. You know, that's another thing. If he was behind Anthony Davis, you could say, oh, okay, you know, Anthony Davis, you know, he misses games. It happens, you know. So, but Julius, I mean, he rarely misses games. So it's something I think they should really look into in the summer. Alex, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I mean, I think what people forget about Obi is that, as you say, he came into the game late. He was supposed to be one of the, you know, most NBA-ready players in that draft. And he came in his first season. I don't know if you remember the first few months, he was almost unplayable.
Yeah.
He was absolutely terrible. Like, we had conversations on the pod of, you know, oh no, we've made a mistake here, you know, and that's how I felt at the time, that he did improve, he'd get there, but his progress has been so slow, I don't know if players develop at different ages, but you know, you'd think if there was something, you know, some serious kind of star spark there, that we would have seen it by now. His game is quite limited. You know, he's very good at certain things, but he's really poor at others, and it doesn't seem to be any huge sign of development there. So the only thing I would say for him is that, and it's my major criticism of Tibbs, I know you make sure you're sitting down for that, that, you know, Tibbs just isn't an adaptable coach in style of play. I mean, Tibbs does make you know adjustments and things like that. I think that's a bit of a myth, but you know, just as in, like, he doesn't have a plan B. And I think Obi would be, even in the form he's in just now, you know, would be a good backup to Randle. You know, they're very different players. And the same way that I hoped Hartenstein would be a good backup to Mitch, and that they're so different. You know, it's against, you know, what Mitch and Noel were. They were far too similar. But it just gives you a plan B. You know, you can bring in Hartenstein and play in a different way. And I think a lot of the problems that we're seeing with Hartenstein are along the same kind of lines as the problems we're seeing with Obi and Randle, in that, you know, we just don't adjust to a plan B when things aren't going right with, say, Randle and Mitch. Do you know that we can't just, you know, change the whole game plan and go off in a different direction? It's just, let's just keep trying the same thing again and again until it works. And it doesn't always work. So, I think, you know, there is a role here for him, but just whether that, you know, ticks all the boxes that Obi sees in his career, and if he does need to do it elsewhere, then yeah, I think it'd be sad to see him go. I say I love his personality. He seems like a really good guy, but
the other thing too, Alex, is that what kills him is Quickley's development, because they came in the same draft class, and Quickley has made strides as a defender, as a shooter, as an initiator, in so many ways over when he came in as a rookie. And Obi's still the high-flying, dunking guy who hit an occasional corner three. And that hasn't really changed much, and he hasn't really added a layer to his game, whereas I feel like Quickley has. And that hurts him. And Grimes' development, it hurts him. You know, all these things. You know, would I like – I mean, I feel like Obi could be an interesting player if he was in Charlotte, catching lobs from LaMelo Ball all the time. You know, that team plays at a crazy pace. He probably needs something like that, you know, and right now
without the pressure of having to win all the time.
Yeah, exactly. They're a young team. They don't care. You know, they're developing. You know, they're happy just to have highlights, you know, and have a player.
If he makes mistakes, he's not going to get pulled out, you know, and, you know, that kind of thing.
But, guys, let's talk about
the thing, man.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
I mean, just it's that that's the thing. Like, we didn't get to see enough of Obi playing, because it's he plays 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. I mean, and we utilize him on
so short.
It's a short leash. And like Quickley had time to, and when Quickley's in the game, we get to play to his strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Get running that second unit, we get to play for his strength. And like Obi, we saw Obi's strides of Obi being good off the bench, but that strictness Alex mentioned about Tibbs is like, 10 seconds and I got to pull Obi. He's scoring 15 points, 10 seconds. Randall's got to get in. He needs to get those 40 minutes in. I mean, sometimes he was a bit too strict. I mean, young players need time to get that development in. And 10 minutes or 15, to me, I don't think it's enough. And maybe it could have been more. I'm not an Obi guy, again, but maybe a little bit more minutes and playing to his strength, because I think Obi's very good finisher at the rim. He can adjust, move his body, and we sit him in the corner. So it's like, send him in the corner. The basket is all the other way, like in the middle. So it's, again, I think the situation is close to Cam Reddish. Like, it was an ideal. It wasn't the plan. He didn't have the shot he could have had somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll see what happens with Obi. We'll see what happens with all these guys on the roster, right? But let's talk about a trade that did happen across the river in Brooklyn. The Nets super team is now officially dismantled. You know, last week we talked about Kyrie Irving being traded to the Mavs, and now the centerpiece of their super team, Kevin Durant, has been traded to Phoenix. Obviously, that was a rumor in the summer when he initially requested a trade, and now it's actually happened. The new Suns owner coming in, making a big swing, as new owners usually tend to do. And here, I have the trade in front of me because it's so complicated. Rafa, we were talking about it before we started recording. So it's a four-team trade between the Suns, Nets, Bucks, and Pacers. So the Suns out of the deal get Kevin Durant and bubble legend TJ Warren. And the Nets get Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, four unprotected Phoenix first-round picks, plus a pick swap going all the way up to 2029. And the Nets are also receiving two second-round picks from the Bucks. The Bucks, for their role in this, get Jay Crowder. And the Pacers get three second-round picks, cash considerations, George Hill, and Jordan Wara. So I want to start with Rafa on this one because he was really geeked up to talk about this topic. So is this the biggest failure of team building and free agency in the history of the NBA?
Yes, it is. It's James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant. They made all of this fuss around him. We're gonna be great. Once Harden gets back, we're gonna be unstoppable. This great monster team gonna take over the Eastern Conference. They played 15 games together. 15 games for Harden, Durant, and Kyrie Irving. I mean, I love it. And shitting on the Knicks, every chance they got. Brooklyn is cool, and it's a place to be. You're gone. You're in Phoenix. That's the place to be now. I mean, I absolutely loved it. It's the second time the Nets make monster trades, trading for all these players and then get nothing. Trading, talking about the KG and Paul Pierce trade with Joe Johnson and Brook Lopez and whoever else was there. I don't even remember. I mean, I love it. It completely failed. Kyrie Irving did complete disservice to the Nets and to Kevin Durant, like with all his shenanigans around him. He made the Nets straight away James Harden, because James Harden wanted to leave because Kyrie Irving was there bullying him. So they got Ben Simmons, who's alone in the Nets now, which is amazing.
You know, real quick, Rafa, on James Harden.
Yeah.
Very interesting. He's really kind of reinvented himself a little bit in Philly. Leads the league in assists, you know, and he's turned himself into a really good and reliable second option distributor type point guard type player. So just want to throw that out there. I know you guys aren't really keen on Harden, and he's still kind of aggravating to watch play, but I commend him for being able to kind of, I guess, humble himself enough to be a little bit more pass first than he used to be back when he was in Brooklyn and Houston.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if I was James Harden, I would just, I don't know if he has Twitter or not, but just a simple tweet or Instagram or whatever. Hey, guess I was right. Just all I would say. Yeah. He was right, because that was toxic and everything else. And, well, Brooklyn traded three stars. Well, two and a half. Harden now is a star again. Well, so to say, three stars. And they got zero all-stars for them. You got a lot of picks, especially for Durant, because that Dallas pick, Dallas trade we talked last year is kind of eh in terms of picks and players. Says how much Kyrie Irving devalued because of his, all of his stuff around him. And tell you what, I was kind of surprised Kevin Durant wanted to get traded immediately, because we did talk last week how the this Nets team can be, well, there's Kevin Durant, Ben Simmons might get a bigger role, the team around him seems nice, Finney Smith, a good defender, Dinwiddie back, thought he can might achieve something even with Kevin Durant, and now he's gone, and their best player is Mikal Bridges, who's very good, but I mean, they got picks, they need to rebuild again. It's I love it. Nets crumbled, and the Knicks from that summer, the only players staying in New York are the Knicks signings, and I love it.
RJ and Julius still here, man. You know, RJ and Julius absolutely are still here. Go ahead, Alex.
Rafa, you did mention the Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce deal. I was going to say, Omar, you should have phrased your question: is this the worst front office deal since the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Joe Johnson big three trade? But I mean, there's obvious parallels to that deal. The difference being, and we talked about this earlier, is, you know, what they're left with after, you know, it all goes to shit. You know, and if you remember, they got left with pretty much nothing after the Garnett thing went well,
they're
south.
Decimated. So, they were hell.
You look at their team now, and you know they're almost back to where they were before they got Kyrie and KD, and the kind of fun scrappy team, you know, that you can imagine, you know, the fans will get right behind. They've got some really good players. Claxton's playing really, really well at the moment, and they've got others, you know, Cam Thomas guy, young guy, he's looking like he could be a spark as well off the, maybe not as a starter, but off the bench.
Jamal Crawford type instant offense scorer type player.
So you know, as I said, there's obvious parallels, but I think that they're in a really good place now, you know, pick wise as well. So I don't think I think they can move forward with that. It's where they go. I mean, I think basically what's happened with them just highlights again how, you know, how careful you need to be with your star hunting. And we've mentioned already about how Rose was really cautious at the deadline, and I'm just so happy to have a front office that is a bit cautious after everything we've had over the years. And just seeing where you know we started out as part of our rebuild, you know, looking across at Brooklyn and just seeing, well, this is what we need to do. We failed to get Kyrie and KD. The reason they got Kyrie and KD is they had a fun kind of fun team that, you know, could really work from there. And, you know, they just needed those stars to kind of put them over the top. And we thought, right, well, let's rebuild slowly. Let's build up this kind of roster of players where we've got a good solid core of young guys to go with. And then when the time's right, then yeah, we can make those big deals. And I think that's still the plan. And it's just the right deal hasn't come along yet, or maybe we just aren't quite there yet with our young core. So I think it's just a warning sign. And again, hopefully, Rose has taken that on board, and how quickly it can all go wrong. Bridges, I know that you said, Rafa, there's no all stars on the squad at the moment, but Bridges is as far as I'm concerned. He's such a great player to have, you know, as a kind of building block. Yeah, he's somebody I absolutely loved in that draft, and I'm so gutted now seeing how, you know, Knox has turned out, that we never got him.
Don't worry,
you
Alex, he's coming. He's coming for the Villanova reunion in a couple of years.
Again, talking about Tibbs players, that you know, he would be definitely a Tibbs player. You know, I saw something interestingly that he could be the first player ever, I think, to play 84 games in a season. Because I don't think he's missed a game.
Oh, because of the trades and everything, and the fact that he never misses a fucking game.
Yeah, so
that's funny.
Obviously Phoenix have played more games than Brooklyn have, so that would be interesting if he could keep that run going. But as well, he got compared deal wise to OG, and if you see how many games OG misses, you know, talent wise they're probably not that far apart, but you know, just the fact that he doesn't miss games is massive. So yeah, they do have some nice pieces there, but hopefully tonight, I see this as an opportunity to finally get over the hump and beat this.
Don't say, oh man, you said it.
No, I said, you know,
prediction's coming soon. It's okay.
Oh my god.
Please, just give me this one.
here's my thing on this, guys. Like, the problem with the Nets, it's not so much that a free agent assembly of talent failed. It's really more about the way they carried themselves, and not just them, really, because like I feel like there's two sections of Nets fans. You got the people who were like fans back in the New Jersey days, remember Jason Kidd and Vince Carter and all those guys. And even before that, you know, with the Drazen Petrovic and all that. But then you have like new gen Nets fans who kind of just hopped on as soon as the team got good and got Durant. And those are the annoying ones, right? So I feel bad for like OG Nets fans who were supporting this team back in New Jersey. Because, you know, they've watched two cataclysmic kind of free agency trade collapses in the last decade. You know, like, that's not great, you know, but it is such like a failure in organizational structure, because they just gave the keys to Kyrie, KD, and Harden and let them run with it. They're like, oh, we don't need a real coach, or they get fucking Steve Nash and he gets fired. They don't go anywhere with him. Like, oh, well, we do this. We're this, you know, we're the cool thing, blah, 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 blah. It's just like you gave all this. In a way, it's like during this era of player empowerment, they're kind of the case study for why that's a bad thing. Not saying that it is, but it just failed so miserably, you know, because this was supposed to be a team that was going to run the East for the next 5+ years, right? Where you have the remainder of Kevin Durant's prime and Kyrie to still be there as that second guy. Then you get Harden. It's like, all right, who's going to beat this team? And apparently everybody, because they couldn't get out of the second round. You know, and when I look at, but I think I told you guys this recently, like the Nets right now, as constituted with all these players, they're a fun league pass team. Like Cam Johnson can play, Mikal Bridges, you mentioned it, Alex, Dinwiddie, Finney Smith, Cam Thomas. You know, they have a lot of interesting wing players, 3-and-D type wing players that, you know, this league seems to covet. And you say, all right, if you throw all these guys in there with like a big like Claxton and like a point guard like Dinwiddie or Cam Thomas, you know, what happens? And who knows? I mean, the team's still probably going to make the play-in or the playoffs because they have won enough games up until now. And I don't know. It's just, I think they'll be a fun team to watch, but this is kind of like a cautionary tale, right? Like, this is what happens when you go big game hunting and you don't have the organizational structure to do it. And I think the Nets looked at it like, all right, we're going to get KD. We're going to turn into the Warriors East. The problem is, like, people who always want to be the Warriors don't realize the strength of that organization to become that. One, you don't have a superstar like Steph Curry, who's, like, humble enough to take a back seat to a guy like Kevin Durant. Two, like, you have Steve Kerr and Bob Myers and Joe Lacob and all these guys. The front office is very strong in Golden State. And you don't just manifest that by signing a couple free agents. You know what I mean? So, like, who's the Nets? Like Sean Marks is their GM. I mean, he's all right, but, you know, he's no Bob Myers. Like, you know, like, let's be honest here.
It's to your point, it's like Kevin Durant won the title playing with an organization that was set with the Warriors, and that the players around there were, as much as you don't like perfectly a guy built. Like, or you can talk shit about Draymond Green, mm-hmm. You know, he's a guy who's going to lead you in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure.
And as much as Kyrie Irving talked shit about LeBron James, he won title with Cleveland with LeBron James guiding him into the right direction. Mm-hmm. And with a guy with your point about Steph Curry taking a back seat, like Kevin Love with the Cavaliers, who took a back seat to let those guys run the show. And at Miami, Bosch taking a back seat. I mean, neither Kyrie Irving James Harden had his team and failed and complained about Houston and everything else. But
at least
they
he
never
got to a conference final, man. I mean, like,
that's crazy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He was the guy who was giving the fight to the Warriors, to those same Warriors team with Kevin Durant. It's like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving thought, no, it's my team. I know what we're going to do. We're going to do this and that. We're going to trade away Jared Allen and give money to DeAndre Jordan. That was the first stupid move they made. They did everything that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant wanted them to do. They traded everyone to get James Harden on the team. They got his buddy. They got DeAndre Jordan, his buddy as well. They got everyone around him. And it didn't work. We don't need a coach because we had, let's get Steve Nash. And it failed. They needed a coach because they needed someone to guide them.
Like, yeah, as much as people act like you don't need coaching in this league, you do need coaching in this league. You know, maybe not as much as in other sports, but you do need it.
It's the only time Kyrie Irving was really successful, was close to winning a title, when he was a Robin to LeBron James. But LeBron James is Batman. And that's it. And
LeBron Jameses don't grow on trees. You know, not everybody is LeBron James. LeBron James is an all-time great, top five ever played to pick up a basketball type player. You know, congratulations.
Big skinny
to
guy, big skinny guy from Texas, LeBron James.
Yeah. And by the way, I just picked it up. We were talking about Mikal Bridges being an Iron Man, basically.
Yeah.
He has right now the current longest playing streak in the NBA. 366 consecutive games.
He just doesn't miss games. He's a throwback, man. He's like a 90s player. You know, he's just like, he's just there, always available. You know, so I like Mikal. He's a nice player.
Not like Zion Williamson, who's...
Man, that's so frustrating, man. It's just missing more time now. It's just that body, it's just so impossible to maintain, you know? It's like if you watch like one of those superhero movies, right? And there's like this substance that has so much power, but it can't be contained into whatever cylinder is containing it. That's Zion's career in a nutshell. He has just all the strength and this brute force, but just can't be contained in this frame that he has. It's just so sad because he's such a talent, you know?
I was comparing to Tiger Woods. When you used to watch Tiger Woods when he was younger, and the way he swung the ball, you were like, there's no chance that he's going to go through his career without like serious knee or back issues. Do you know? And
yeah, that's a good point, Alex.
So much really power that's going through that, you know. Anyway.
Let me ask you guys this. So a lot of deals happened. You know, there was some big, some small. D'Angelo Russell back to the Lakers. Obviously, Kyrie to the Mavs. KD to the Suns. Do any of these deals kind of change the landscape for any teams moving forward? I guess if there's a team that really got exponentially better after the deadline, what would it be? I'll start with you, Alex.
I think the Lakers made a lot of good moves. You know, that the guy who was linked with us, Vanderbilt, he's apparently made a great start, big impression. So
New York legend Mo Bamba on the Lakers now.
Yeah. Can't see him getting a huge amount of minutes, but they seem to have done well as well. The the front office at the Lakers got huge criticism, obviously, up to this point. So they almost think have saved their job with this trade deadline. So
it's amazing how the Lakers look like they never have any assets, and they still manage to make trades to get this team better. I mean, they get Russell Westbrook and turn him into D'Angelo Russell. Like, he's a better player, man. Come on.
I do think that Conley for the Wolves is a better fit for them, like, kind of moving forward.
Yeah.
Just having that veteran presence there. I think that's solid for them.
They're going with Anthony Edwards. Yeah. I mean, but basically the West got stronger, I think. The Clippers made a few moves. Obviously, the Suns made a big move. Dallas with Irving. I mean, Ja Morant was talking shit, so time to get hit. Basically it. Well, what a rhyme. But it's the West got way better. The West is now who's going to look, when you look at the West a few like weeks ago, you were saying probably the Nuggets are going to get it because no one else is in that level of the Nuggets. Right. Now you look at it and it's like, maybe Dallas, maybe the Suns, the Lakers. It's LeBron. I don't think it's
the Lakers have played themselves now that they might be in the play-in. I mean, and they were on the outside looking in before. Yeah. So yeah, I think their acquisitions kind of elevate them to play-in territory. No, I mean, not title contention, obviously, but you know, play-in territory. For me, guys, I think Phoenix has instantly become a contender in the West. Like they were before the season started. Obviously, Chris Paul has regressed a lot this year. There's no taking that away. But I mean, you add KD and you still maintain Devin Booker. I mean, you have Chris Paul who can still turn it on from time to time. Yeah, I mean,
and Ayton.
I don't know, man.
Traded for KD and maintained Ayton. That's something.
Yeah, I mean, that's a super strong roster. You know, losing Cam Johnson and Bridges hurts a little bit. You know, especially Bridges, but you know, you replace it with one of the greatest scorers we've ever seen, still in his offensive prime. You know, so tough to argue that. But one low key one, I think for me, is the Bucks getting Crowder. I think that's just a really good smart rotation move for them, and I think honestly. I think they're already kind of like a championship favorite coming out of the East. You know, when you have Giannis, that's what happens. But I think they're probably going to be in the finals now that they've added Crowder, because that's a guy who's going to make big shots for them in the playoffs. And that's a guy who's going to really have valuable minutes down the stretch as, you know, when they're playing against the Phillies and the Bostons of the world in the East. So not sure if they'll win the whole thing, but...
Just give some cover for Middleton as well, who just seems so unreliable.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and and Crowder's a vet. You know, I'm whatever on Crowder. I'm not a huge fan of his, but you know, he's hit so many big shots in the playoffs, and he's been such an impact player defensively for so many good teams now. You know, it's tough to argue with that acquisition. And you know, Bucks give up a few second round picks. You know, what's a Bucks second round pick? I mean, that's like the end of the second round. You know, it's nothing really. You know,
might as well get a first round pick, and people dismiss that. So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, our draft picks are relevant next week's episode. You know? What are you saying, Rob?
A question for you guys after the trade deadline, after all these moves. Just obviously, we can't really know what's going to happen or how the players work, but how do you think the two teams in the NBA playoffs, how do you think the teams will be? Because we made predictions at the beginning of the season, but now with all these trades, maybe we'd reshape these predictions. To me, I think from the East is between the Celtics and the Bucks.
Yeah,
I think there's going to be that conference final is going to be wild. And from the West, I mean, I'd like to still see the Nuggets because they're. I mean, they don't have to adjust anything. They just let's go. They don't have to adjust with anything. So I think maybe
let me remind you, Bucks, Rafa, Nuggets. That my preseason pick from the West was the Mavericks. So you know, I obviously had no idea that they were.
Mine was the Nuggets. Up. Thank you very much.
There you go.
So we get into some backslap.
Looking great, but I don't know. I mean, I think the Mavs can make a run. I'm be honest. You know, like you have two bona fide scorers. If they could get it to figure it out, two ISO heavy scorers. I mean, that has to be probably the most frustrating watch in the NBA. Just Kyrie and Luka taking turns doing ISO ball, but
worse than Embiid.
Just everyone else standing around watching.
I mean, that's gonna happen. I don't know. I kind of like Phoenix to get there, to be honest. Having Durant is such a huge thing, and a healthy Booker. It's regardless of your feelings on Booker, Rafa. He's still a bona fide, scorer in this league. So two guys who could just score from everywhere. I mean, that's hard to beat, in the NBA. And I still think the Bucks are going to get to the finals, though. I think we could see Bucks Suns again, to be honest.
Okay. Okay,
Bucks
Suns. So you're changing from the Mavs? Is that it?
I'm sticking with my pick, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Suns got to the finals. Alex, you have any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I had Bucks Nuggets, I think, at the start of the
Yeah, that's still solid. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think there's any reason to change that.
Throw a couple pounds on that on the wagering app there, Alex.
Yeah.
Play a little future.
Yeah. I also had the Clippers. The Clippers just, you know, as we've mentioned many times, such a strange team. They could still come around if, you know, the two obvious players going to get their act together. So I don't think they're out of it either.
Yeah. It should be a fascinating stretch run going into the playoffs. So let's do a couple game picks here, guys. Only two games right now before the All-Star break. So we're recording this Monday night. So the Nets, Knicks just tipped off. And Wednesday, we got a game in Atlanta at the Hawks before the break. So, Alex, what do you got this week for the two games for the team?
I think they're two tight games. So I'm going to go 1-1-1. So the Randall's absolutely torching the Nets so far. So I think he scored all points. So
all seven.
He's about to feast. Seven, yeah.
Just kind of thinking, you know, we're gonna lose one and gain one. I think they're just two tight games, so I could see them going one way or the other.
All right, Ralph.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's 1-1-1-1. I think we win this game against the Bucks, and then the Hawks, the Bucks, no, the Nets. What? Win this one against the Nets, and then with the Hawks, it's always the same thing with Trae Young, and I think we probably lose in Atlanta.
I'm gonna go 2-0 because I demand vengeance for the last time they were in Atlanta. And I was in the building, and they they caught the L there by collapsing a little bit late. So I'm gonna say 2-0. Go into the break on a high note. Go into the break 5-1 in your last six. That's solid, you know. So thinking a little positively here. So we'll see how it goes with the Knicks this week. Of course, like you mentioned, they're playing the Nets right now. So we're gonna stop recording in a second and jump right to that game. So thank you everybody for tuning into the podcast. You can follow us at WW Knicks Podcast on Twitter, and make sure to follow us on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and subscribe if you enjoy the podcast. This is Omar, Alex, and Rafa, Worldwide Knicks. Catch you guys next time.